And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Well, you probably heard of the Climate Hawk's admonition to electrify everything, right? And that basically means that we need to have more and more electricity in our lives because we can produce electricity cleanly. And probably the most obvious example of the electrify everything creed is with electric vehicles, right? We want to get rid of burning gasoline and have our transportation all come from electricity, right? It's a noble goal. You can extend that, and we should extend that to the concept that buildings, the places we live, should be totally electrified. They should be the equivalent of our electric vehicles. That requires thought and care. It's easier said than done. And because this is such an important and valuable issue to discuss, we are happy to be joined by an expert, from Environment America, Ms. Bryn Furey. How are you doing, Bryn?
I'm excellent, Ted. Thanks so much for having me today.
Well, it's great, great to have you here. So, Bryn, you recently co-authored a report about electrification of buildings for Environment America and made the case that we need that electric buildings are a good thing. So tell me, is that description right? What's the story? I mean, what's the content of your report? What do you, people should know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the story that we really wanted to tell with the report is that building electrification is the key to unleashing the power of clean energy. So I think, you know, if we're imagining a society in which we run on 100% renewable energy and we are able to reduce air pollution and combat climate change and reduce the worst impacts of global warming, we're going to need to stop burning fossil fuels to power our homes. And in order to do that, we have to electrify them so that they're able to hook up to an increasingly green electric grid. And then we can get all of our power from wind and the sun and other renewable sources. So that's really the story that we're trying to tell with our electric buildings report.
Sometimes people are so close to it, they can't see the forest for the trees. I mean, tell me, how do you burn fossil fuels in your home? I mean, how does that happen?
That's a great question. And there's an NPR reporter recently said, it's hard to imagine your home just standing still, releasing emissions and, you know, burning fossil fuels. So really, when we talk about electrifying buildings, we're talking about three separate systems in the home: the way that we heat our home, the way that we heat our hot water, and the way that we run our appliances. So what we look at in the report are ways that we can electrify those different systems and take out the burning of fossil fuels from those systems.
So good. So please continue with the scope of the benefit of this concept of electrification. I mean, what's that?
Lots of benefits. I'm glad that you asked. So the two key ones that we want to highlight are the environmental benefits and the health benefits. And those primarily come from the enormous impact that electrifying our buildings can have on reducing carbon emissions. So our top line finding in the report is that if by 2050, we electrified every single home and office in the United States, we could reduce carbon emissions equal to taking 3 times the number of vehicles that are in Texas right now off of the road. Which, you know, if you even imagine the state of Texas, that 3 times over, that's a huge amount of carbon emissions that we are able to reduce. Now, the benefits of that can be felt when we think about outdoor air pollution, obviously, but also indoor air pollution. So one of the examples that I really like to use are gas stoves, because I think that's one of the things that's most tangible for people. Every time you turn on your gas stove, you are decreasing the quality of the air in your home. And a study found that it can get so bad that the air quality in your home is worse than what would be illegal outdoors.
Really?
And that is a really sobering fact, that, you know, we would say, oh my gosh, this is terrible air quality. We don't want people breathing in these emissions outside because it's linked to all of this like respiratory diseases, cardiac diseases, et cetera, et cetera. But we're willing to allow that to happen right inside of our home every single day.
So the typical Thanksgiving morning where you have four burners going, cooking your potatoes and carrots and butternut squash, and the oven's cranking away, you're generating, what is it, like the nitrous oxide? I mean, you're burning that. So just typically, not everyone does it this way, but typically you have a gas stove in your house that's burning methane gas, and you're producing nitrous oxide kind of stuff, a little tiny particles? I mean, is that the nature of the pollution that's generated with a cook stove?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the kind of the kinds of particles that you would be breathing in. And I think Thanksgiving is an excellent example to think of because your whole family's in one house. Maybe some folks have asthma. You know, a lot of people in my family have asthma. And you're only making that problem worse. By burning all these stoves and releasing all these harmful particles into the air.
So what you're, it seems to me, you're connecting these very specific things that people really interact with closely, right? Your cook stove is, you know, you go there daily to eat, and that connects to both sort of long-term health through the quality of the air in your home and the whole issue of climate change that you're polluting it. Interesting.
Yes, exactly. It's terrible.
And so what other, so there's a benefit of reducing the pollutions. I mean, can you talk any about Massachusetts? Is there anything specific in Massachusetts that, so this is a national report you've talked about, and yes. There are the you talked about Texas as being, you know, three times the cars in Texas you could take off the road, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me Massachusetts is particularly vulnerable to this sort of indoor pollution and has a particularly big opportunity for emissions reductions through buildings. Is that true?
Yes. So some of the information that we have about Massachusetts in our report that I can share are that in 2017, 31% of statewide emissions in Massachusetts were produced by the residential and commercial sectors, so from homes and office buildings. And 31% is a pretty significant chunk. And one of the things that we do in our report is we rank states in terms of the benefits that they could receive from building electrification. So we look at emissions, what states could stand to reduce emissions at the highest amount if they were to go all electric. And Massachusetts actually ranks number 8th in the nation for the number of emissions that we could reduce if we electrify our homes and businesses by 2050. Uh-huh. And the number that we could reduce emissions by about 10 million metric tons. Which is not an insubstantial amount. Right. That's a lot of averted air pollution. And you can imagine in 2050 and 30 years from now, if we were to go that route, the air would be much cleaner, would be much healthier, and just a, you know, a much better place to live and be all around.
I have a home. I've got a gas heater for my hot water, a gas furnace. I've got, I say, boy, I would certainly like to change all that, but it's too expensive. Yes. Is there a case to be made that, you know, could a critic say, oh, it's way too expensive to do this pie in the sky thing you're talking about? Or is it practical?
Definitely. And I think that's one of the most common responses. I think that people really get sort of skittish when they look at the cost, and it's completely fair. One of the things that we found is that when it comes to new construction, that cost factor actually doesn't apply, because in almost all cases of new construction, it actually makes financial sense to go all electric. It's cheaper. However, when we're talking about retrofits, like in your case, you want to replace your gas heater, your gas stove, all of those different appliances in your home. That is where it starts to get expensive. And that's where we really, really think that we need to advocate for cost incentives. We need the government, our decision makers, utility companies to really be offering opportunities and programs to make it more cost effective for folks to go all electric in our home, because really it's a systemic problem, right? It's not me as an individual. I should be going out and purchasing all these new things. If you have the means, that's fantastic. You know, that's great. Do it. But really at the end of the day, we need to be making the case for cost incentives, right, and making sure that it's easier for folks to
transit. And when you say cost incentives, you basically mean like sort of the classic rebate to financial assistance to change out your gas stove, for example. Right.
Exactly. So rebates and other financial programs that would, you know, offer that opportunity.
I think here in Massachusetts, there's something called a roadmap, which explicitly calls that out. So the strategy, correct me if I'm wrong, but the strategy here in Massachusetts is to say, boy, when your gas stove or home heater reaches the end of life, we would like to help you put in a green alternative. Is that accurate?
That I actually can't speak to. That I'm not 100% sure. I think so, but I don't want to say something that is wrong. So
yeah, no. I think I've read that there is this aspirational goal or a strategy to say, you know, over the next 10 years, because there's a relatively high capital expense, right, to put in new things in an existing home, the strategy is to say, yeah, well, we want to get in when the moment is right, when that old junker in the basement has reached its end of life. That's an idea that we should put, even if it's not a formal policy yet, it ought to be, right?
It ought to be, exactly. To be exactly. Way to do it,
because, so I guess the other question, the big issue around homes is, or the other big thing that burns in a home is the gas that goes for the space heater in the basement, right? So space heating, when I think of a space heater, I think of a little electronic cube you use to keep a side room warm. But in fact, space heating is a term that you're warming the whole house, right?
Exactly.
And natural gas is often used here in Massachusetts anyway. That's pretty common, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
So what are the alternatives?
The alternatives to space heating. So we really are big advocates for heat pumps. So there are two types of heat pumps that we highlight in the report, and that's an air source heat pump and a geothermal heat pump. And the first one, the air source, works by taking in, moving energy into the home that's warm. So sorry. I'm just going to restart that one, but it works. The air source heat pump works by moving warm energy into the home and warming your space that way, and then moving cool energy out. And it's sort of like a reverse air conditioner. And the geothermal heat pump works a little bit differently. It has the same sort of concept, but it's installed underground, and it uses the earth's relatively stable temperature to move warm energy into the home and move cool energy out. And in the summertime, they can operate in the other direction. So you can just switch it and it will move cool energy in. And so you have a cooler home when it's hot during the summer, and then move that warm air out. So those are the alternatives that we look at for space heating.
It seems like magic. I mean, it seems like magic to talk about pumping heat, right? Because it's such an abstract concept, but it's like what is an air conditioner doing is taking the heat out of your house and ejecting it out the window, basically throwing all the heat in your house out the window when you start to think about it. And if you turn the air conditioner around, right, took the air from the outside and ejected heat, that's a heat pump, right? And so it's a very... So it's not a scary technology. It's very well known. And of course, the prices are dropping and it's much more electrically efficient, right? You use a lot less energy moving that heat around than you do burning the natural gas, right?
Yes, there have been great advances in heat pump technology over the last couple decades. And so, you know, not only is it more cost effective than ever to adopt this technology, but also it's way more efficient. And it's significantly more efficient than their methane gas counterparts to heat the home, which is fantastic.
So the building electrification, right, which you very nicely explained, kind of breaks into two big categories. One is sort of the new buildings. So we're talking about kind of a 2050 goal. You get new buildings, say, man, by jingo, if I build a new house, it just makes economic sense to have it all electric, right? To have heat pumps and all induction stoves and all this kind of nice stuff in the new house. There's the retrofitting portion where we say, okay, retrofitting existing stuff can be a little pricey, but it's worth it for the government to help finance those fixes. Does the report touch at all on, I mean, this is where it sort of, I mean, the opportunity for jobs in a long-term effort to retrofit? I mean, did you discuss that, or is that sort of outside the scope of what you were looking at? Because, I mean, Joe Biden's running around talking about jobs, right? I mean, this is concretizes, so to speak, the idea that, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done in this kind of retrofit section of the building electrification initiative, right?
Yeah. So unfortunately, it is outside of the scope of the report. So we don't talk about jobs. But I think that, you know, as you pointed out, there is a lot of opportunity if we're talking about rebuilding infrastructure in this way for jobs. And if that's something you're interested in, I can definitely send you some more resources on it later, but definitely
that's,
outside.
That's great. I think, I'll put it to you. Let's summarize. Repeat the story, because it's such a good story, right? People, you know, they talk about going to law school as a, tell people what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. So we should, let's summarize the concept again, because it's such a critically important one for people to have in their head.
Great. So if we want to reduce air pollution and avert the worst impacts of climate change and global warming, we need to transition to 100% renewable energy. And the only way that we are going to be able to do that is if we stop burning fossil fuels in our buildings. And that's where we begin to call for electrifying our buildings and, you know, hooking them up to a green electric grid and repowering them with 100% renewable energy. So that's the story, I would say, the big story.
That's fantastic. Well, Bryn, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. So tell me, if someone wants to learn more, what URL should they go to? How can they help out? What's the Environment America? What's their digital presence, I guess I should say?
Yeah, definitely. So if you want to learn more about the organization, you can go to environmentamerica.org. Or if you want to go straight to the report page, what you can do is go to bit.ly/electricbuildings2021.
Super. So what we'll do is we'll put those links into the blog associated with this podcast. It'll be on the MCAN blog at massclimateaction.org/blog with all these nice links. If you have a question about this podcast, or you want to make suggestions or things we ought to talk about, please send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Tell us what we ought to be, what's important for us to be talking about. You're probably listening to the show on your smartphone using one of the modern podcast distribution apps. If you are, please ask all your friends to listen to us on their favorite modern podcast distribution app on their smartphones. Please, it helps spread the word. It's your climate action for the week. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses a regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Bryn, thank you so much for being here and for producing such an insightful report.
Thanks for having me, Ted. I'd love to be here.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.